Morning, everybody. So today I'm going to talk about some of the work that my former postdoc and former PhD student, Luis Valenzuela and Oscar Vargas, did on blueberry root systems. So for those of you not familiar with blueberries is in the ericaceous family, and ericaceous plants have a fairly unique root system compared to many other crops. They tend to be shallow-rooted. Blueberries tend to be confined to the top 30 centimeters or top foot of soil. They're acid-loving plants. They prefer a low pH, typically between 4.5 and 5.5. And as a result of living in this low pH environment, they're adapted to using the ammonium form of nitrogen over the nitrate form. They take up very little nitrate, and if they do, they don't have the enzymes to utilize it. And the other important point about blueberries, at least in terms of their roots, is that they're sensitive to high salinity, salinity not from what's present in the soil, but from the fertilizers that we add. Production has changed considerably in recent years. We've gone from about 100,000 acres 10 years ago to about 140,000 acres, but areas like the Pacific Northwest, when I first got there in 2003, we had about a total of 3,000 acres in Oregon and Washington. We now have about 20,000 acres. In the past, the plant spacing was a lot wider. It was about 4 to 5 feet within a row. A lot of the growers tended to use flat ground. Sawdust mulch was pretty much the standard in the Pacific Northwest. Most growers at the time were using sprinkler irrigation, and the state of the art for fertilization was one application once a year, basically putting on a large dose of ammonium sulfate. Since then, we've learned that we could get much higher yields per acre by putting the plants closer together and manage them much better. So now it's about 2.5 to 3 feet apart. We use raised beds. We see some increased production due to raised beds. Weed mat has become pretty common in recent years due to increasing cost of sawdust. Drip irrigation is also becoming more popular for blueberry. Pretty much any new acreage is irrigated by drip. And as a result of using drip, we can now fertigate or inject our fertilizers through the drip systems. And we're also seeing an increase in organic production as we are in a lot of crops. So what we were curious about, what were the impacts of these different new management practices on root production in blueberry? The only study that's been published on root development was published in 1987 by Abbott and Goff, where they looked at the development of the shoots of a blueberry plant over the season, as well as the development of the roots. So the roots are in white, the shoots are in the green. And basically what some of the conclusions they came up with is that they found two peaks in root growth. One was early in the season before the peak in shoot production. And the second was later in the season following harvest. So they basically concluded that there was basically competition within the plant between the shoots and the roots for carbohydrates. So when the shoots weren't growing, the plant would then produce roots. They also suggested that perhaps that since both these peaks occurred between 14 and 16 degrees Celsius, that was the optimum for root production. Well, the problem with the study was the state of the technology at that time. The way they did this study, they had sawdust mulch. So what they did is they just scraped the sawdust away, looked for white roots, took a ruler, measured those roots, covered them back up, and went out there once a week and did that. So, of course, I mean, it's a shallow-rooted crop, but not that shallow-rooted. So what happens if we look at the deeper roots? And as I mentioned, the other thing that's unique about ericaceous plants is they're extremely finely rooted. Luis, who did some pH work on blueberries, had actually looked at that. He went under the microscope and he actually divided the root system into the different orders, taking it from the first order, second order, third order, fourth order. What he did is went with the razor blade and cut these root systems apart and weighed them and so forth. He's not legally blind, but it was a very nice study. And what he basically found is that if you look at biomass, yeah, there's a lot more biomass on these thicker roots, but the majority of the roots in terms of root length are these very fine roots. So on the histogram, the largest majority of these fine roots were around an average of 40 micrometers. So it's a very finely rooted crop. And it's also important to consider this because these are the roots that are basically functioning in nutrient uptake as evidenced by the fact that it's only these first through fourth order roots where mycorrhizal colonization occurs. So we're basically that's where the nutrient uptake is occurring in these plants. Well, now we have more advanced systems. It's not quite to the aeroponic stage yet, but we do have mini rhizotron systems, and we have systems now where we can actually magnify the root system. So we go in, we install these clear plastic tubes in the ground, and we have a digital camera where we can go down and look at the roots over time at different depths and follow what's happening with root development. So we can bring it back to the lab, and we can look at, under higher magnification, these very fine roots that these ericaceous plants are producing and monitor these over time. Now, of course, we can't look at morphology, but what we can do is we can see when the roots are being produced and how long do they live. So our first study where we looked at the root systems of blueberry was a conventional blueberry trial that was planted in April 2006 in Oregon. And this was a study basically to compare granular fertilizers, traditional granular fertilizers, to fertigation. So with the granular fertilizers, you have to water it in somehow. We are dry in the summertime, so we can't rely on rain. So we use microsprinklers to simulate the sprinkler systems. And we did a triple split application, which is basically what's recommended at this point in time for granular applications in blueberries. And we compare that to a weekly fertigation from mid-April to early August. In this case, the plants were irrigated by drip, and this is now the industry standard where we put two lines, a line on each side of the row, and either it could be suspended, but in our case, we buried it underneath the sawdust mulch on top of the soil surface. This was part of Oscar's PhD research. Oscar just graduated a few months ago, and he's now working at Dole down in California, but this was his work looking at not only what happens below ground, but above ground with fertigation systems. One thing that he found was that if we compared fertilizers to no fertilizer, of course we got increased yields, but also if we compared fertigation here in the green bars versus the granular fertilizer in white, we consistently got not only more higher yields, but we got more growth with the fertigation than with the granular fertilizer. So it amounts to 12 to 40% more higher yield each year with fertigation and granular fertilizer. And the main reason what's happening here with the granular fertilizers is that if we look at below ground, we install these soil solution samplers where we're able to monitor changes in nitrogen availability as well as the solidity in the soil. And what you can see is every time we apply that granular fertilizer, you get a huge peak in your ammonium concentrations. Well, that translates into high EC levels, as high as 8 decisiemens per meter. Well, blueberry is sensitive to EC. We've done this in greenhouse trials to reconfirm this. They're higher to EC levels. They're sensitive to EC levels higher than 2 decisiemens. So even at our lowest nitrogen rate, which is lower than what's recommended, we're exceeding that rate. If we fertigate, on the other hand, our ammonium levels were consistently less than 2 parts per million, and our EC was approximately 1 decisiemens, so a lot lower. And that you could see that in the plants. If you look at the granular fertilizers, you could see a big difference between the size of these plants and the fruit development in these plants with the fertigation versus the granular fertilizer. Well, if we look at root production, what we see is a little different. So here we have the root production over time, over 3 seasons, so from the 4th to the 6th year after the planting. Oscar took a lot of images, 73,000 images. It's a lot of work doing this mini rhizotron study. That's why it takes a while to get them published. And he followed 2,000 of those roots over time. And basically what you find is, so this is when the roots first showed up, was right here in July is when they first showed up on the window. And what we immediately start seeing was that we had higher root production or more roots being produced over the course of the season with the granular fertilizer than with the fertigation. And that was consistent. We did see those 2 peaks in root production, just like Abbott and Goff did. So that was good that what they did actually was representative of what's happening below ground. And that was consistent from year to year. So overall, what we found if we compared our drip to our granular fertilizer, so the drip with the fertigation or microsprinklers with the granular fertilizer, with and without nitrogen, the lowest root production overall over that three-year period was with the fertigation, had a little more root production, although not higher when we did not fertilize the plants at all. And then if we look at our microsprinklers, we had our highest root production. But what was interesting is when we looked at how long these roots live, so let's just compare our fertigation to our granular fertilizer, our roots that were fertigated lived 184 days on average, or that was the median lifespan. And whereas those that were irrigated with the microsprinklers and the granular fertilizers lived only 126 days. So essentially what's happening is we're producing fewer roots with fertigation, but those roots are lasting longer over time. So if we look at what's called root standing crop, basically the amount of roots that's available over any given time, so that's in the white shading here, and compare that to your cumulative root production. So basically what's happening, if we look at fertigation, that ratio of the cumulative root production versus the standing crop is a lot lower than if we look at our granular fertilizer. So here's our cumulative production over the course of the season, but here's the standing root biomass. So a lot of these roots are turning over the course of the season, whereas a much lower percentage of those are turning over in the fertigation treatment. So what he was able to conclude from the study is that, again, found those two peaks of root production before and after harvest. The fertigated plants produced fewer roots than those with the granular fertilizer, but the root lifespan was much greater with the fertigation than with the granular fertilizer. And winter root mortality, again, was greater with the granular fertilizer. The second trial that I'm going to talk about is in an organic trial. That was Bernadine Strick. She's the lead PI on this trial. This was planted in October 2006. And we had two cultivars in this field, Duke and Liberty. So we had an early season variety and a mid to late season variety. And what we did in this study is it was a system trial to look at different systems for organic production of blueberries. So at this point, we were interested in comparing the flat beds to the raised ground. So that was one of our main plot treatments. We're also looking at sawdust versus weed mat. Weed control is, of course, very important in organic production because you don't have herbicides. So we're looking at, what are the best ways to control weeds. So we're looking at the use of weed mat, which was just starting to come on as a popular management option at that time. And the plants were irrigated by drip. Certainly wouldn't want to use sprinklers in this situation, particularly if you're using weed mat. And we used different fertilizers. We used either a feather meal product, which is a granular product, or we used a fish emulsion called fish agar, which basically is a combination of, it's a liquid product that's fish and molasses and so forth that is injectable through the system. So we were able to apply the feather meal as a granular product and the fish by fertigation, and we looked at those with a low and a high rate. And basically what we found is we found more shoot growth and greater fruit production on raised beds than on flatbed. We also found more growth and shoot production with weed mat than we did with the sawdust. We had a mixed response to the fertilizer source and rate depending on the cultivar. Liberty, for example, had no response. It didn't matter what fertilizer source we used or what rate we had. It pretty much had the same yields, whereas Duke tended to be sensitive to the higher fertilizer rates, particularly when we used the fish fertilizer. And the other thing that we noticed, too, is that soil organic matter was declining under the weed mat relative to the sawdust. Not a surprise, but this is important for blueberry because they do like high organic matter soils. So Luis looked at the development of the roots in this particular trial on the Duke plants. And basically what he found was is that he had greater root production with the sawdust mulch than he did with the weed mat. So the weed mat was actually reducing root production, and he had slightly higher root production on raised beds than on flat ground. Now if we look at the root standing crop, you could see that, just like the root production, the amount of roots that were existing at any given time was greater under the sawdust than the weed mat. But what was interesting was in the raised beds, we also found more root standing crop, much higher than with the flat beds. So although that root production was only slightly higher, the standing crop was much higher on raised beds, suggesting that root turnover is essentially lower, not turning over as quickly on the raised beds than they are on the flat ground. So his conclusions are that sawdust mulch resulted in twice as many roots as weed mat, raised beds resulted in more roots and less root turnover than flat ground. And one thing I didn't talk about is that, but not surprising, a lower and more productive rate of fish fertilizer, at least in this cultivar Duke, resulted in more roots and a relatively deeper root system. So with less fertilizer, we're actually able to get the root system to go deeper, which could be an advantage, particularly like in drought situations. So with that, I'll take any questions. Yes?
Is your modern package the same in the dry fertilizer versus the first experiment you talked about in irrigation?
We didn't apply, the only fertilizers that were applied in that particular study, which is pretty common in conventional fields, was the nitrogen fertilizers. So we used different nitrogen sources. We used ammonium sulfate or we used urea, but we didn't apply other nutrients in that particular study. Yes?
Did you measure root size in any way?
Yes, they did look at, they're working on the publications now, and they did look at the relationships between root diameter as well as depth in the soil profile and so forth. And of course, you know, finer roots are going to turn over more quickly than roots that are thicker. And also you see less turnover deeper in the soil profile than you do near the soil surface.
How did you quantify the turnover? How did you know what was live and what was...
So what you do is you have these clear tubes. You put your camera down at the exact same location every 2 weeks. So you're going back to the same roots week after week. So you take that back to the computer. You have an army of undergraduate students who go and trace every single one of those roots, and then there's a software program that keeps track of that. So then you basically give that root an identification, and you follow it over time so you know when it's produced and when it disappears. So death is basically defined in this case, which is good in blueberries because they just disappear from the window when they die. It's not always so clear in some crops, but blueberry, they do just disappear. Joan?
Did you look at any potential factors that might have made the differences between the sawdust and the leaf mat, like soil moisture or temperature?
Okay, so did we look at any of the potential factors that might have accounted for some of the difference between weed mat and sawdust and so forth? Yes, we did. We did measure soil temperature. We did measure ammonium availability, nitrate availability. We measured soil moisture. And yes, under weed mat, as you might expect, the temperature is higher. So that, I think, is one thing that's going on. And we do see, too, with the weed mat that it's driving the root system a little deeper than the sawdust layer. What's going on with the raised beds and the flat? I don't think we really got at that, but with those measurements so much, perhaps it was a little wetter in the flat ground than in the raised beds, but it probably has a lot more due to aeration and oxygen availability. Yeah. All right, well, thank you.